This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you, Sabrina, for the news. My name is Rich Bradbury. It is, of course, Enterprise Biz Bytes. I'm joined in the studio today by
Majida Hashim.
Arvind Yuvraj.
It's been a while since you were here, Arvind, mm-hmm. right? Yeah.
Oh, wait, when? Last week. Thursday? Yeah.
Nice to have you back in the studio.
Oh, thank you.
Now, if you want to get in touch with the show this afternoon, you can get us on Twitter. We are at BFM Radio, or, of course, on WhatsApp, 018-789-8899. Whole dose of Majida this morning mm-hmm. so far, mm-hmm. right?
And I'm still here.
And you're still here. You've had a busy morning, right?
I hope you guys have listened to the one before this. A really great podcast that you can find on the BFM app right now with the guy that I spoke from Starbucks.
Yeah, I noticed that. Mm. There's quite a few retweets. Tweets about that. What was his name?
Zev Siegel.
There we go.
He's going to be in KL soon. But then listen to his story on how he started Starbucks in the first place. Mm. Really, really great talk about that.
Is it?
Mm.
You see, there's a whole bunch of smaller coffee houses going.
There are lessons that they can learn from him
too. For sure. Right. Anyway, I'll run you through the stories that we will be covering today. We're going to be starting off in a couple of minutes with how mobile phones don't have a place in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
That's something we've kind of discussed before, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And how Indonesia allegedly first threatened to block WhatsApp for a whole bunch of reasons. There's mm-hmm. an update on that story. There's a story that I picked up over the weekend, how researchers have managed to connect a human brain to the internet,
mm-hmm.
the brain-tonet.
Mm.
And then we have the perennials,
yep.
Parents of, millennial parents. And then we're going to be finishing off with how a Bank of America executive says passwords need to go away. That's a very nice, polite way of putting things.
Yeah.
Right. Arvind, kick me off with this whole mobile phones don't have place in the classroom thing.
Yeah, so in the last 5 years alone, they say that a lot of schools in the US, this is research that was done in the US, they say that a lot of them have lifted their bans on smartphones, and then they're allowing students to take phones to school.
Right.
I think some schools here do it as well. I don't know. What's the rule in like government schools and like normal schools? Can students
You're
take
asking
phones?
Two people who are not parents, don't have
don't
children.
Have
I don't. I don't. My younger brother left school like 10 years ago, so right. I have no idea what goes on.
I think they can bring it, but they cannot use it in school. Something like that.
Yeah. So in the US, they are allowed to use it in classrooms. They're even allowed to use it to take notes and stuff. Not all, but most schools, a lot of schools.
Okay.
So they've done research that shows that even simple proximity to smartphones leads to sloppy work, reduced concentration, and lower problem-solving capacity. And they also say that phones facilitate cheating, which I don't agree with, because if you want to cheat, students are going to find ways to
cheat. They'll find
ways. Yeah. You don't have to use smartphones and stuff. Not that I know, not from personal experience, but you know.
But if you really need to know, his telephone number is.
But so they say that college students who don't bring their mobile phones to class score a full grade higher than those who do.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so they did this research based on 91 schools and colleges in the US. No, and then in the UK, they did on 91 schools and colleges. In the US, it was a group of schools. They haven't disclosed the number yet. In the UK, they studied 91 high schools and found that students in schools that impose strict limits on mobile phones saw test scores improve by 6.4% of a standard deviation, and improvement was highest among low achievers.
So this has got to do with being distracted, surely.
Yeah. Right. I guess if you get like pings and dings on your phone and then you need to check it in class and all, you're not paying attention, right?
Yeah.
But some teachers, they're arguing that smartphones can be used as learning tools.
I mean, I agree with that, you know, but
yeah.
Definitely not in the classroom.
Yeah, they're saying that they don't have to. You can reduce the buying of books and then the publishing of books as well. You can take notes on your smartphone. You don't have to buy a bunch of notebooks for a bunch of different subjects.
Mm.
You can just do it all in one tablet or one mobile device that you have. Then on the other side of the argument, people are saying that a lot of these school shootings have also spurred out of control, and parents want their kids to have smartphones because they want to be able to contact them when they're in the school. When news breaks out like this, they want to be able to know if their kid is safe. There are other solutions to school shootings, but you know, where you don't need to have a phone, but you know, let's not get into that,
because that's an entirely different show.
Yeah, there's a way to get that problem out of the way first,
right,
and not have to worry about that.
Yeah.
Mobile phones, they say, can also reduce school safety because the overloading of cellular networks and contributing to the spread of misinformation in school, like rumors and stuff, cyberbullying and gang activity on school school grounds, even when they're forbidden in classrooms.
Yeah, that's a big issue coming up right now, the cyberbullying part.
Mm. Yeah, so they're trying to argue and say, like, how can schools limit the use of handphones, but also give parents that security that they need, that their kids are connected and, you know, they have their mobile devices. So they're saying that...
I have a solution. Mm-hmm. How about they give out the teacher's telephone number? You know, so they can just WhatsApp one number.
Yeah.
Is my kid safe? Yes, done.
Yeah. That's, no, it's funny that you should say
but
that.
But you don't want a teacher getting like hundreds of WhatsApps all the time. Is my kid safe? Is my kid safe? Hey, is my kid doing his homework?
If we have to put up with being in 1,000 WhatsApp groups, then why should the teacher get away with it? No, but seriously, I mean... Go on, carry on. You finish off what you're saying.
Yeah,
first.
No, I mean, because you say that the teacher should have the number. They actually said that one of the solutions is to have a small customer service center in the school itself.
Right.
Something
right.
like that. Like,
yeah.
like a place where people can call. Because if you have problems with the airlines, you know, and a plane goes down, then you call the airport or you call the carrier of the plane, right? And then you get to check about the people on board and stuff. So they're saying that if something does happen in a school, like some kind of a tragedy, then you call the school's customer service, the so-called customer service network. And then they update you on the safety of your kid and the status and what's happening inside the school. The other way they say is that they should have lockers. They should build lockers and ask students to deposit their phones in the lockers before the class. And then once school session is over, then they can pick it up and then go home. Or they can use it during break or something like
right.
that.
Right. I mean, yeah. that seems like a normal thing to do. I mean,
yeah.
you know, when I turn up at my school, back in the day, when you take your calculator to school, you know, mm-hmm. you turn up and the teacher would say, have you got your calculator with you? And of course, if you're doing mathematics, yes, of course, you'd have to have it. Mm. Otherwise, they'd be like, can you just put it in your locker? Why would yeah. I need my calculator in PE?
History.
You know, or history. But yeah. they would yeah. make sure you've put it away because people would be playing with it. They'd just be playing with it, you know,
yeah.
so it has to be put away.
Yeah. yeah.
And if you can play with your calculator, then you can, you know, imagine the things that you can do on your phone.
Right.
Yeah.
But it also, I mean, I don't know, I'm like 50-50. On one end, it's, yeah, you shouldn't have phones in classrooms and stuff. But on the other side, if you have a phone, but you're still asking your kids to buy like notebooks and not use the phone for what it can be used for, then it's kind of a waste.
Mm. Mm.
Because you have the phone with you, but then you're asking them to buy like a separate calculator and take it into class just because you don't want them to have the phone.
Mm.
It's kind of redundant.
Mm.
Like, why would you do that when you already have a smartphone? Which is smarter than most smart calculators.
For sure.
You know?
Okay, let's throw it out there then. Folks, if you're listening at home, do let us know. Do you think it's a good idea to allow your
yeah.
kids to take their smartphone into class?
Yeah.
If so, tell us why. If not, tell us why. Get us on WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Or, of course, get us on Twitter at BFM Radio. Please ensure you're not driving or in class whilst you're doing this. Okay, let's move on to the next story then. This is a linked and related story
yeah.
to smart devices and WhatsApp potentially being banned in Indonesia.
Yeah, speaking of access to linked devices, because we don't know what's on it, right? So yesterday there was a story that broke to say that Indonesia vowed that they will block the WhatsApp Messenger within 48 hours if the service did not ensure that obscene graphics on GIF images were removed from WhatsApp itself. So if WhatsApp doesn't get rid of all these GIFs, the moving pictures that you have on its service, Indonesia will block WhatsApp. It's given them 48 hours to decide.
But that seems like a very heavy-handed approach to something that WhatsApp can't really control without blocking the entire third-party thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's why WhatsApp said that we can't block it. And Indonesia wanted it blocked because some of the GIFs are a bit obscene in their interpretation.
That's okay. Do we know what their interpretation is?
There's no indication over here. They just said obscene GIFs should be removed. They don't want it at all.
Right.
Remove it or we will ban WhatsApp.
Right.
So WhatsApp responded by saying that, well, it's a third-party thing and we cannot do anything about it because of end-to-end encryption.
Yeah.
So if Indonesia has a problem, then they should take it up directly with the third-party provider. And so it's this ding-dong thing, whether or not who is responsible for this content that is on WhatsApp. Is it WhatsApp itself? Is it the third-party provider? The latest development that we found this morning is that this GIF keyboard, Tenor, has been completely blocked already. So if you have a GIF on Tenor in an Indonesia provider, either Telkomsel, XL, Indosat, First Media, or Bolt, then you can't use it anymore. We don't have a confirmation on this. So if we do have anyone listening for Indonesia, if you can't use this anymore or if you still can use it, let us know. let us know. But that's the 48 hours is still running, actually, because Tenor is just one of the providers of GIFs for WhatsApp.
There's a whole bunch.
There's
of
a lot of others, a lot of others, and Indonesia just wants them completely not but being able to access.
Here's the thing, right? For a lot of these GIFs, animated whatevers, it's user submitted content, right?
Yeah.
So how do you stop that without blocking the entire thing? And that's what Indonesia's done, right? I don't know. I mean, and the idea of it being something obscene without them actually clarifying what is
obscene,
what is considered obscene, because whatever's obscene to you is different to what's obscene to me, and vice versa, right?
Yeah, that's like saying they're gonna ban Google because you can find stuff like explicit content on Google. It's not Google that's making the explicit content.
Yeah.
It's just they're allowing you to search for the explicit content that's already out there.
Which is their part of their function. Yeah. The whole thing is about searching for stuff.
So the question is who is actually responsible for this content? The people who submit the content or the tool that is the platform for this content itself? And that is where the ding dong is happening.
And that's going to be one of those debates that will go on forever. You know, whose fault is it? You're allowing me to search for it. So is it your fault for doing that? I don't know.
No, I mean, it's 100% not WhatsApp's fault.
For sure.
I mean, you know, they're used for communication, right? And then one of their like bonus things is you can use GIFs because people like to send emojis and GIFs and stuff.
Yeah.
Some people more than others, Arvin.
I wonder who.
I wonder who indeed. Uh-huh. Right, we're going to have to take a short break. We've got some music coming up from New Order with Waiting for the Sirens Call. When we come back, talking about how researchers have managed to connect a human brain to the internet.
Nice.
Different kind of viruses coming up. Don't go anywhere. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Bureaucratic failures multiply. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm joined in the studio by
Arvind Yuvaraj
and Majida Hashim.
We've had a Majida marathon all morning. She's with us until the all of the afternoon. Mm-hmm. What time is your shift finishing today? I mean, you got another show after this? I mean,
she'll be on the bigger picture, evening edition.
And the rest of the evening,
all the way through. Anyway, if you've only just joined us, we had a couple of stories that we kicked off with. We started off with how mobile phones don't have a place in the classroom. We're looking for your opinions on that. If you have an opinion, do let us know. Do you think we should be allowing mobile phones in the classroom or not? Get us on Twitter. We are at BFM Radio. And then we moved on to how Indonesia have threatened to block WhatsApp messaging over alleged obscene content on the platform. And now, here's a story that I picked up over the weekend. This is something that we've kind of spoken about, and Majida's kind of joked about, and Elon Musk has terrified us about how researchers have now managed to connect a human brain directly to the internet, right? And now this sounds really like something out of a science fiction novel. This is not The Matrix. People aren't getting plugged in that respect. But researchers from Wits University, they've managed to link a brain directly to the internet, and data gathered from this project could help fuel the next steps in machine learning and brain-computer interfaces, right? So a team of researchers from Johannesburg in South Africa, they made this breakthrough, and it is in the field, obviously, of biomedical engineering. And they released, they did a press release on Medical Express, and they found this way of connecting the brain, and they're calling it the BrainTernet Project, and it essentially turns the brain into an Internet of Things node on the World Wide Web. That in itself sounds terrifying. So it works by taking your brainwave, your EEG signals, gathered by this device called an emotive EEG device. These are things now that you can actually buy, and their tagline is "Open your mind to brainware," the most accurate, cost-effective whole brain measuring technology on the market. Essentially, you can buy, like, it looks like I don't know how to describe it. Almost like a bandana that you put on, but it reads your brainwaves. You know, and there's two different versions. There's a pro version that's like $800, and there's a prosumer version which is like $300. It reads your brainwaves. It's then those signals are then transmitted to a Raspberry Pi, and if you know what those are, they're very small, cheap computer devices. That then live streams the data to an application programming interface and displays the data on an open website where anyone can view the activity. So this guy, who's a lecturer, has said, BrainTernet is a new frontier in brain-computer interface systems. There's a lack of easily understood data about how brain activity works and processes information. The BrainTernet project seeks to simplify a person's understanding of their own brain and the brains of others. It does this through continuous monitoring of brain activity, as well as enabling some interactivity. It's the interactivity part that I'm interested
in. That's
pretty
interesting.
So it's said that this is just the beginning of the possibilities of the project. The team is now aiming to allow for a more interactive experience between the users and their brain. Some of this functionality has already been built into the website, but it's a very narrow, limited to stimulus such as arm movement, stuff like that. So it can be further improved to classify recordings through a smartphone app that will provide data for machine learning algorithms. So as exciting as this sounds, all that is happening is that people who have volunteered for this project are having their brain waves read. That brainwave activity is then being published onto the internet, and other people can access that live streaming data. So it's not as exciting and as, you know, futuristic as it sounds. But even so, the very fact that people are volunteering to put what they're thinking about live on the internet, I think it's fascinating, right?
No, I mean, are they publishing what they are thinking about, or are they publishing what they are feeling at the moment? Because like brainwaves are like, you know, you're angry and then it spikes and then it goes down.
I think it's a combination of the two. The Braintonet project, you can actually go online and you can Google it and you can have a look at these people that have volunteered to do it. As you can imagine, it's a little bit rough and ready, but it's worth looking at just to see how people's brains think and change throughout the day and what kind of different signals are happening throughout the day.
Weren't they like planning on doing this for those bionic arms?
Yes.
Because you need to like hook up the arm to your brain so that it can move better, and then it can sync with what you're thinking. Because
Right.
now that's not how it works, right? Because now it goes according to like muscle movement and stuff.
That's right.
Yeah, so the arm clenches or the leg moves. So once they can hook it up to your brain waves, and then it can pick up, like if there's no delay, then your bionic arm pretty much moves like your actual arm.
I'm just a little bit worried that once they've gotten to that stage where other people connecting from the internet can, you know, control you. That would be a little bit worrying. But I know Majida was like, you know, when I tweeted about this the other day, she was like, I told you chips were going to be in the brain.
Then I'm disappointed that this is not about chips in the brain, okay? What makes it interesting is that it's less scary than chips in the brain. Because when I mentioned this to chips in the brain, then all of you were saying that I don't want anything implanted into my brain. But like you were saying, if it's a band and it's reading brain waves and it's not inside your head, but it is connected with all these suction bits of your head, and it already reads brainwave from there, then it makes making this kind of technology more acceptable. You can read how the brain works and what it's thinking, and you and the controlled motorized movement and how memory works without cutting open your brain and put things inside.
Right.
It makes it more accessible for people and not so intrusive as chipping your brain.
Well, I mean, you say that, but the idea of kind of bi-directional information is something that terrifies me. I mean, we talk about how easy it is to break into the Internet of Things and play around and have some hacker from Russia, you know, or wherever, have control over these little systems. If it's gotten to that point where they can actually hack into your brain, you know, for want of a better term, and play around with the way in which your neurons fire and the way in which electricity works in your brain, because it's a very simple process, right? Even as complex as our brain is, we know that the smallest amount of change in electric current in your brain can have massive effects.
That's right.
And it's not very difficult to be able to do that over a situation like this.
I guess because it's an external device, it is not as dangerous because you can take it off. It's different if you actually have a chip implanted into your brain. And it's not something new, because people do have ocular implants.
Yep.
People do have all these things that are already to help hearing and to help people see better.
Pacemakers.
Pacemakers and to move your bionic arms and things like that. It's already in your brain. And that, to hack into that thing that's already in your brain, is scarier than this, which is an external device that you stick onto your head.
This is the first step, though, Majida, to getting to your chip in the brain.
It is already happening. Chips are already in the brain. I am calling it as it is going to happen.
Uh-huh.
That you will be able to upload and download things straight into your brain. But this
decades away, though, hopefully.
Not as far, maybe, as you think. But this is a step there already. If you can, if we can collect a lot of data on how the brain waves work, then the chip that we will create later on will be more efficient.
It'd be a storage device as well.
That's true.
Right.
If I want to be able to drive a helicopter and I don't know how to do one now.
You see,
I can
now you're talking Matrix stuff, right? I want to learn Kung Fu.
But can't you do it already with this brainwave thing? If we can if we can read the brainwaves of a person who knows how to use a helicopter and all the motor functions and all the memory of that person and transfer it to a person who doesn't know in an unintrusive way through this thing, in theory, it can work.
There's a whole bunch of psychologists right now going, right?
No, I mean, there's
a collective intake of air.
And gasping.
Gasping, yeah.
No, but because that's how the brain works, right? I mean, it's just that it happens slower because we like take bits and pieces of information from here and then put it together. Then we sync it with our like motor functions and stuff. But if you can program the brain to do it, like a package, and then you can buy it from a shop, Like Netflix, but for life skills.
Right, right.
Yeah.
I'm going to learn Japanese. Kink, done.
And tomorrow you're a pilot.
Yeah.
But I like to look at this because I always like to connect it to the medical field. It helps people say things that they cannot say for themselves.
That's
because,
true.
You know, if they don't know what's going on in their own head, and then you you hook them up to this machine, and then you see spikes in their brain activity, you don't know when you're having a spike in brain activity. That's the whole mystery of it, right? But if you can see it on like a graph and there's like physical proof, then there's more reason to go and fix it instead of, you know, cutting into him and, you know, giving him like a bunch of medicines that won't work and like trial and error with this poor guy. That's how I always look at these things, just helping people know what's happening inside their bodies more than they would be able to tell you.
Yeah, and we've also already spoke on how this kind of brain waves can help identify people who are depressed and people who are suicidal anyway. And if we can detect these brain waves around people, then we can identify these kinds of disorders quicker and get them the help they need.
Yeah.
All right. Interesting talk set. Let us know what you think. First of all, we want to know whether or not you think we should allow mobile phones into the classroom. Please do get us on Twitter. We are at BFM Radio, of course, and WhatsApp 018-789-8899. We're going to take a quick break. Some Foster the People coming up right now with Houdini. Do not go anywhere. It is BFM Enterprise BizBytes on BFM 89.9.
Before Friday materializes. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. I'm Rich Bradbury in the studio with
Arvind Yuvaraj
and Majida Hashim.
Now, as much as I love the New York Times and their groundbreaking journalism, the very fact that they have created a new word, the perennials.
Millennial parents.
Millennial parents. Mm. Oh my, I can feel the eyes rolling outside, at home and in the cars.
I told you like out there that, you know, the moment you say perennials, I think of perennial because my dog had a perennial hernia.
Every time
you say like perennial, I think of some weird surgery in areas that you don't want to know about.
Okay, so this might be a story you might want to know about though. Majida, explain what this is all about.
So this term is from the New York Times, and they're talking about this cohort of young people born, according to them, between 1980 and 2000s, and they have all grown up now and they are becoming parents. They are tech addicts. This generation, according to the article, is often criticized for their lack of maturity, their inability to cope with stressful situations and obsession with narcissistic social media, all of which makes for a rather interesting way. It's rather interesting to see how they are now handling parenthood, arguably the most challenging job in the world. So many things are different when millennials are put in the parenting seat, whether it's redefining their gender roles, how they raise their children in a secular home environment, struggling to make ends meet while working in the gig economy. And life has a wholly different feel for young parents today as it was a generation ago.
Right,
and the big difference is that now technology plays a role in their life. So for perennials, it's Google, not grandma, who they run for advice.
I do that. I will admit I do that. You know, how do I do and it's YouTube or Google.
Yeah.
But there are some things that you still want to run to your parents for, that you want advice from. But for this generation, the internet is their oracle of wisdom. Parents follow the baby website religiously regarding about infant development week by week. They download apps to track breastfeeding and naps, and they search online when they're trying to figure out what's normal and not, instead of asking their parents and or their grandparents. If, like, say for example, you need a nap or need to put your kids to sleep, they download an app.
Is it safe to
do it? Yeah.
Wow. What? Oh, you perennials.
So this generation wants to do things this generation does not want to do things their parents did, and generation is not the exception. So what's amazing is that the volume of information that they have on their fingertips right now, and it's the unfortunate downside of the eroding of communication within communities. So you are not having wisdom from your parents and your aunties and all passed down to you anymore. Instead, you Google up things which you need to find out. And I guess that's the downside of relying too much over the internet.
I don't know. The auntie knowledge is, you know,
it's pretty strong.
There are aunties about to tweet in, and if you are, please tweet in the wisdom that you do want to pass down to your children and, you know, your younglings.
I mean, grand
younglings,
elders.
It's a Star Wars term. Yeah. If like grandparents, like they have like certain kind of wisdom and knowledge, you know, so it gets passed down, and that's fine. But like. Random aunties and like people like distant relatives, you know, giving you so-called wisdom,
parenting advice.
I would trust Google more.
Like, I err on Arvin's side of that.
You know?
I agree. But then again, if you chose not to listen to that advice, and something went wrong. You know, you for sure would never hear the end of it.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
I told you. I told you.
Yeah, they never ever. Right? I guess this is the balance with it. There's the advice that you know, your elders can tell you, your aunties and your parents. But then there's this other end, this perennial who relies so much. For example, when you need to entertain your kids, so they will place smartphones and tablets as entertainment for children, and they're constantly you have to put it there because the kid now becomes dependent on that device in order to sleep or in order to eat and things like that. And the rampant use of screens, contrary to what they think is convenient for them, according to the American Academy of Pediatrics, they say that children under 18 months shouldn't have a screen in front of them at all.
At all.
And because it affects their behavior, it affects their sleep. And I know toddlers or very, very small children right now who, well, they can't use the bathroom on their own, but they know how to swipe on a screen already. And that becomes something very disturbing.
A little bit too early for Tinder.
But they're just swiping, you know, other things on the screen itself. The obsession becomes... it can be taken a step further. It extends to creating YouTube accounts, Twitter handles, and hashtag for babies.
Instagram accounts for babies.
For babies, right? Yes. There's one example here in this article, and they said that there's a parent who used social media as an influence for the child's name. And according to her, she knew she wanted to name her daughter Bryn, and they were considering the middle names, and they wanted it to start with an A. And they chose Bryn Avery because Bryn Avery is available on the Twitter handle. And the Twitter handle is being created. And that influenced how she named her daughter.
I mean, there are elements of creating social media accounts at a young age that I could see are of a benefit, right? Mm. Let's say, for example, I mean, Arvin, I know you curate your Instagram account you're quite harsh on what you upload, right? Not harsh. Harsh is probably not the right term. But you're very selective.
Very selective, right?
Yeah. And so if you were to create an Instagram account for your child, for example, and it was a private Instagram account, and so you're taking photographs of their daily development, their weekly development, or whatever, that is essentially the modern day version of a photo album, right? Movies been able to... That I can appreciate. But somebody who makes it into a public account and is constantly publishing, you know, pictures of their very young child as though it's them public. For me, that I find, I don't know, not inappropriate, but I find it a little bit weird.
Even if it's not on the child's specifically created Instagram account. I mean, even parents who are posting lots and lots and lots of pictures of their babies on their own Facebook account becomes something that you question where the line is, where online privacy is concerned.
But that could be because we are not parents.
That's
true. I mean, I'm sure...
I'm sure a lot of them are going, it's my Facebook account,
exactly.
I can post what I want.
Exactly, and they would probably say the same thing about me for publishing pictures of my cats or whatever, you know. I mean, obviously it's not the same, but I can see where they're coming from.
Yeah. Yeah, but well, I guess I know people who have created these accounts, and they want a specific name, and they have this sweet story to say that, you know, when my child turns 18, I want to give it to them as a present, and they can have all these pictures. But like you said, if they put it in a private account, that would be something that the child then can grow up to decide whether I want to open it up and let everybody see it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And so that would be the. Depends on why they would create it. Do they want a collection of photos, or do they want to publish and say, "Hey, everyone, look, my daughter can walk now. Here's 100 pictures of her taking her first steps."
The perennials making the accounts for their kids and stuff. I don't think they realize that once the kid grows up to even like 10 years old, all this stuff is going to be old.
Yeah.
And it's going to be stuff that the kid's parents did, which automatically makes it something that they don't want to do. Yeah, it's uncool. Like even Facebook, there's this thing going around that the youngest generation now, they don't want to use Facebook because it's something that their parents are using.
Yeah.
So it's something that they think is not hip or it's not, you know, it's not trendy for them. So they go to things like Snapchat. And then when they become parents, then they will stop using Snapchat. Snapchat won't be around by that time. But you know what? Whatever they are using,
the people the share prices that are snapping tumble.
Yeah, no, I mean like 10 years from now, Instagram is not going to be. It has gone through like so many changes in the last 5 years alone. The Instagram of 5 years ago is not the same Instagram that we have now. The same way that if you make accounts for your kids, like Facebook accounts, email accounts, Twitter handles, and stuff, it will be of no use.
No, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And the kid is going to have their own Twitter handles and all when they turn like 6 or 7 or whenever they, you know,
using whatever future platform that they will be on later on.
Yeah, but the part where technology kind of like bonds people together and creates like a bridge between like age groups and stuff, that one is true, because you can see people like parents and kids using the same kind of technology like WhatsApp. Then there's like a connection there that people didn't have before, because like the old generation, they used to just say they read some kind of a book. The new generation is not going to read it, but now you have parents sharing stuff on WhatsApp with kids about the same kind of news and same videos, and then it gives them like something to bond over. So that one is cool.
Alright, we have to take a break. We got some music coming up from Jack White. It is I'm Shaking. When we come back, final story of the day, how the Bank of America exec says that passwords need to go away. We can tell you what might be coming next. We're going to take a short break here on Enterprise Biz Bytes, BFM 89.9.
Break from midfield, BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. It's our final story of the day. Arvin will be telling us how a Bank of America exec says passwords need to go away. Very polite way of putting things.
Yeah. So, like now we use IDs and passwords, like username and password. And then if you forget your password, then you click the forget password, and then they send you your stuff in the email.
In an ideal world.
Yeah. In an ideal world. Yeah. And then you can log in again. So the Bank of America is saying that this is an outdated way of doing things. It's becoming obsolete. People are getting hacked left, right, and center. So you need other ways to log into your banking or any kind of financial service. They are looking into using facial recognition, like the one that iPhone uses. They're actually thinking of working with Apple to get the same technology. And they also want to use fingerprints and biometric data and stuff. So they are saying that since banks are like prime targets for hackers and stuff, which is they're exploring using these two technologies. Fingerprints are the only type of biometric data that the Bank of America is using now to verify their identities on phones and other devices. So just last week, they announced plans to roll out fingerprint verification on personal computers as well, especially the ones running on Intel technology. They want to see if that can work. So you don't have to use a password when using your desktop PCs or laptops, anything. If you have a touchpad, or you have any way to scan your fingerprints, which most phones can do now, then that's how you log into your banking account. If you don't have that, then you just can't log in.
I know that one of the local banks does that as well for one of their apps. I believe it's CIMB. They will use your touchpad on your phone to allow you to log into certain parts of your bank account. So you can view your transaction history, or you can view your account. Mm-hmm. But to go any further than that, that's when you input your password.
Yeah. Since you said CIMB, they've done something like, I know like before they used to send the TAC codes on via SMS.
Yeah.
And now they're doing it via the app, which is much more secure.
Yeah.
They've been working on the app a lot. They've been tweaking it and stuff, and now it works way smoother than before.
Yeah, agreed.
They're also looking at biometrics, like I mentioned, to make it faster and safer. And they say that the advantage of biometrics is that it can replace passwords that can be difficult for customers to remember. So like what you were saying with the forget password stuff, it doesn't have to happen anymore, because your fingerprint is your fingerprint. There's no way anyone can hack, no way now that anyone can hack and get your fingerprint information.
Quickly disclaimer. Yeah.
Because with the stuff that's happening, you know, it's not, you know, it wouldn't be impossible. But for now, for the technology that we have, fingerprints are the safest way to do things. That's why, like, passports implemented, immigration is using it. And banks say that that is the way of the future. You have to implement biometrics and you also have to use facial recognition, but only if that facial recognition is exclusive to you. Because I think some people did those tests with the Apple phones and said that if you have like an identical twin, they can also log into your phone. So this kind, you can't, you know, have these kinds of loopholes and stuff.
Wow.
Yeah, I think there's something going around YouTube. They haven't, I don't know if it's 100% true, but someone tested it and said that you can, if you have a twin that looks exactly like you, they can log into your phones.
That is interesting.
Yeah. So if, you know, it has to be, I guess the facial mapping and stuff has to have way more points and it has to be able to know that it's you for sure. So you can't have those kinds of problems.
From what I understand, the Apple iPhone X, the facial recognition software currently has been downgraded from what they said it was going to be due to manufacturing costs and one thing or another. So it's not as accurate as it actually could be right now.
Yeah.
So we're just at that very early stages right now.
Yeah. I mean, one day we're going to use that the kind of mapping that they use in movies. Like if you've seen stuff like War for the Planet of the Apes, you know, it's got like thousands or millions of points that detect exactly who that person is. The funny thing is, Bank of America says that they experimented with voice recognition, and then they said that they're not using it because it was proven to be too clunky and there was too much friction in the process, which is weird because I know that in the last 3 to 4 months, I think a lot of banks here locally have been asking me for voice recognition stuff. Like I think I called up one of my banks, and then the person, the customer service agent said, can you record your voice because we want to configure the voice recognition stuff. So I had to do it. There was like a whole process. I had to press 2 and then they asked me to say like a line. I recorded the line and then they asked me to say it again, and then you do it for the second time and then it configures your voice recognition. Yeah, so the next time I call in, all I have to do is say a password in my voice and then it picks up. The fact that Bank of America says that it's too clunky and there's too much friction means that, I don't know. I don't know if they have stopped using it or all banks are going to stop using it because it's not safe anymore.
Right. We have to wrap up, I'm afraid, folks. We are out of time. But just to quickly address Kumiko on Twitter, who said, I'm a millennial born in 1994. I spent the childhood outdoors playing with crayons. Wouldn't want to expose my child to tablets early.
Yeah, I like that.
Good for you.
Yeah. Yes, right. We have to wrap up, though, folks. Let's quickly run through the stories that we covered today. A whole bunch of mobile stuff and phones and tablets. Arvin, what was it?
Yeah, we even started off with the question if mobile phones should have a place in the classroom. There was research saying that it shouldn't because people grades are suffering and security is also a problem.
Then we spoke about how Indonesia has vowed to block WhatsApp within 48 hours if they don't get rid of obscene GIF images. Tenor is already banned and we'll see whether anything else gets banned.
We also spoke about how researchers have managed to connect a human brain to the internet. It is the brain-tinet. It's not a joke. That's what they're calling it.
Mm-hmm. And then we spoke about perennials and how they are tech addicts and how it will influence how they parent their children and how they raise their kids.
Finishing off with?
With the Bank of America saying that passwords and user IDs are obsolete and people need to use biometrics to log into their financial services.
If you missed any part of this show, please download the app from the Apple App Store or Google Play Store. Of course, you can also download the podcast from bfm.my/podcast. Right, very quickly, do not go anywhere because coming up after the 1 o'clock news, we have the Breakfast Grill replay. It is Michael Cho, who's the Chief Executive Officer of IFCA MSC. They're an integrated solutions provider specializing in the property sector. The company is set to undergo a transformation termed as IFCA 2.0. The Breakfast Grill spoke to Michael about the company's plans amid the challenging property landscape and their strategy moving forward. That's all the time we've got for today. We will be back tomorrow, of course, at noon on BFM Enterprise BizBytes. Coming up, some music. It is Queen with Killer Queen here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.